Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Configuring WebSphere Process Server Deployment Environment with DB2. Today's presenter is Daniel Eccles. Dan is a Level 2 subject matter expert for WebSphere Process Server that joined WebSphere Business Integration Customer Support in November 2004. At this point in time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Dan.
Thank you, Joseph. Today I'm going to speak about configuring WebSphere Process Server, building a deployment environment with DB2 using scripting. Slide 2, Joseph. The agenda is to talk about the process server environment, installation, configuration, database design profiles, testing the database connection, creating the deployment environment. And then hopefully we'll have some time to talk about some of the problems and answer questions if you've experienced any problems building the environment already. 3. So the default multi-system or multi-platform topology is remote messaging and remote support. If you look at the diagram here, there's a cell, which is the yellow box, and it contains two nodes. Each node could be a separate system with a deployment manager on a separate system. Of course, this could all be built in the same system, and I've built this in different ways here. Remote messaging and remote support. The primary thing is that it allows you flexibility in failover situations, being able to move from system to system by adding nodes and removing nodes if you want. Deployment manager could be a separate platform. Typically, we see it built as all the same hardware, maybe all AIX. But I won't get into great detail of what all of this is. This is just to show you what I'm going to display as what we're building. This is the target. 4. Next, I'm going to talk about the installation process overview with the system environment, how we build it with installing it with Installation Manager. WebSphere Application Server is installed with 6 packs, and feature packs are added, then WebSphere Process Server, and then 6 packs. 5. And then after the software is installed on 3 platforms, say like deployment manager and 2 nodes, you need to configure a database. In most environments I've seen or worked with, they have a remote database instance. The tables the database DDL, data description language, SQL scripts are provided in package for WebSphere Process Server and can also be generated through a utility called DB Design Generator. This is used to create a common database and can be used also to generate all of the SQL if you wanted to create separate databases and for each one of the different components. Not shown in the diagram above on slide 2 was that for each cluster you can have configured databases on separate hardware platforms or separate systems. So if you're going for the most performance, you may want to actually have, for example, the business process choreographer database on a separate system in its own isolated platform or cluster even. So what I'm trying to point out is that there are numerous amount of different configurations you can build for performance. In my example, I'm going to provide just a common database where everything is in the same system. So to configure, after you've installed the software and build a remote database instance with DB Designer, you create profiles with manageProfiles.sh. You start the deployment manager profile and then augment the or add the nodes to that deployment environment. Each one of the nodes is in the diagram above slide 2, there is a deployment manager and 2 managed nodes. So the managed nodes need to be added to the deployment manager. So after it started up, you can create your deployment environment, and this can all of the steps above and creation of the deployment environment can be scripted. So the entire build process can be automated. 6. So not provided in the Info Center as an example. All of the steps are provided in the Information Center for Webs for Business Process Management, version 7 Information Center. But the steps for actually creating an instance is not there. It's in part of the DB2 or whichever platform database you're going to use. But I provide it here just as an example in case you're an enterprise that you need to work with your DB2 administrator to set up and may not have immediate access if you're doing something for a quick staging or learning environment. You want to just download DB2 demo instance from the port site or DB2's pages on IBM.com. You could create a user instance with user add here, just showing the steps of creating a user, making the home directory, changing the ownership, setting a password for DB2 demo, and then creating an instance. These are steps that are normally done by a database administrator, and if you're just creating an instance for your own development, you can follow these steps and quickly create an instance. Slide 7. And then to start up the database, you would log into the host. In most cases, if you're using, for example, Bash or whichever shell you're using, normally would set up this for you automatically, but if it doesn't, you can execute the DB2 profile, which sets the path and configures for DB2. Issue the DB2 start commands. Set up the communications for TCP/IP. The port is generated dynamically for the connection, and you can find this with this command here, repping the DB2 log name, or DB2 underscore with the username, which in this case it would be DB2 demo from /etc/services, pipe it to head -1, cut. A couple of Unix commands that'll filter to get just the exact port number. To test whether the port is listening, you can use netstat, the commands here for the command line. So this page is just showing you, after you log into your DB2 host, which is, in this case, remote from the Webster process server environment on a separate system called DB2 host, we have the username, the host name, user's password, and the port. And these are the things that you need to use to connect to DB2 and configure DB2 for the data description language. Slide 8. So once you have the database there, you can use the DB design generator to create the SQL for the environment that you've created. The commands that, or DB2 design generator is an interactive program that runs from the shell script and prompts for entries. The first question it asks what topology that you're going to build. The number three is the network deployment environment. And then subsequently it asks and prompts for more information until the final one is to generate the scripts. So if there's really no way to use this program as a batch, so using Unix, here is command with, that you see on the end of this line here, greater than, exclamation mark, EOF, which is just a sort of tradition, I guess. You could use any character at the end of the greater than to end the session. This is an example of a way that you can feed the answers into a program. So DB design generator with less than exclamation mark EOF will read all of the answers that you provide, and any defaults would be something like a carriage return up until the exclamation EOF. I think I should have provided a better of an example here, but the whole point of this was to say that there's no way to batch DB design generator to create the DB design other than using this process of sending the answers into the program. So I provided the example of this later in Techno at the end of this presentation. So I'm sorry to spend so much time on this, but it's just a method to script the creation of the database. So even if you run this interactively, it's not that hard. It takes very little time. It just prompts you for different questions of how you've designed the database, username, passwords, paths to JDBC drivers and such. The result of running the DB design generator will create a log and a DB design file. The scripts are also created for actually executing the data description language, DDL SQL, to actually create tables, create databases. And then at the end of all this, you SCP over or copy over the scripts to the DB2 system and log into that host and run the scripts. That also could be automated if you wanted to run through something like expect. And there's other things there, but I didn't provide any example of that. Expect is an easy way to do that. The key out of all of this is the DB design is used to create, to answer some of the other questions that are normal in the building of a deployment environment. Slide 9. The DB design generator help screen will show you other ways to use the program. You can edit the design file. So if you didn't want to use the here is type way to generate, you could potentially create a template and modify the contents. Use the DB design generator to validate the design file if you're generating the design file yourself. And then if you wanted to use it, then you could use the design file to generate the DDL. In support, we've seen where the dialogue between the installer and DBA and the business analyst, maybe whoever's doing the design of the system, they have to sometimes go through different reiterations of discovery of how the system works. since there's multi-parties involved, you often have to go through this iteration a few times. So using the design file is a good way for that communication to take place. And exaggerating a little bit here, but anytime there's multi-parties involved, and DBAs sometimes in companies are hard to reach, so they have different understandings of what's required to run the system. Some of the trouble that you can get into with DB2 or any database can be avoided by understanding what the requirements are. So the Information Center gives the details of what's required for the database, but as a conversation to the DBA, sometimes this is a good place to start, is with the design file, understanding what's required from the DB2 system, and present that to the DBA. He may come back with, or he or she may come back with something different of naming conventions and security requirements, things like that, that you can then use to generate scripts and then provide that back to the DBA. Slide 10. So once the scripts are generated, it reduces a lot of places where that we've failed in the past, I guess. And some of the problems that I've dealt with had to do with permissions with databases at this step. Creating a profile can also create the database when things are local. When it's remote, you have to have permissions to the database in order to generate tables and things like that. To make it most simple, it's actually easier to create the database design, create all of the tables that are needed for the next step, and not generate the DDL at this step. So in creating a deployment environment profile, I usually use the DB design and turn on the DB delay config. So I don't want to run the, it's possible to create all of the database connections, I mean, all of the database tables at this step, but I prefer to use the manual method of creating the database environment. It allows me a checkpoint to test, do I have all the tables there that I need to proceed? Creating profiles takes a little bit of time. I've set it up with RAM disk, so I've got it down to like 10 minutes or something like that. Probably can get faster with faster systems. But sometimes this takes a little bit of time to run. The key point here is that we're using a DManager WBI server. It's also a point of where we've run into problems. The ports, if you're using anything above 1000, that's a non-root port. If you're running default ports, that's fine too. It's usually 9060. So you don't really need root to do this stuff. So you can do this as a normal user. Other than starting port, you can use actually a port file description to set all of, or most of the ports. So here is another example of using hereIS, or a here file. Using the command cat to create the file dmgr.rsp, or response, up to, if you use the less than exclamation EOF, and you see that later down right before the manage profiles command, we'll provide all of these entries into that file and close the file. And then execute manage profiles minus response with this file. Of course, all of these, everything that you see here also could be command line arguments. I just found it easier to do it this way. It's really personal preference. It's nothing that you can't do if you just use command line arguments and that's also in the Info Center. You can see that. And there's, I think, examples of using the silent methods with just using the command line arguments. After you've create the deployment environment, I mean, after you create the DMGR profile, go ahead and start it up. Slide 11. And then follow this, a similar method to create the managed profiles. This is pretty much the same steps. The ports for generating the starting port and port descriptions work better here at AddNode. For some reason, it wasn't able to get it to work with setting the starting port in the actual profile response file. Also, you can use a port description at the AddNode stage. So here I want to point out also too that we're just pointing to the DB2 class path. We don't need the DB design file. And a key point is that the template file is the managed WBI server. Those profile templates are key, and in some cases we work with folks that are very well versed in WebSphere application server, may pick or try to augment the profiles to the wrong template types. So that's a point of failure, anyway. This is a very simple step. You also create one for the second node in the same method, changing the node name and cell name. Slide 12. At this point, you have a profile running. You could go into the admin console. You could, at this stage, see the two nodes that were added. And you'll see that there are JDBC data sources. And at this point, you should test at least one of these WBI data source. If you're able to connect to the database and test, more than likely the next steps will also succeed. Problems with this would likely be the JDBC connection or JDBC path wasn't right, or the authentication alias wasn't created properly, or the password may have changed, something like that. So troubleshooting this step isn't that hard. It's just getting down to the authentication alias and the database properties, connection properties, and sorting those out. If it doesn't work at this step, don't go forward. Make sure this is working before the next step. The process of scripting this test isn't something I've been able to actually do yet. It's pretty well defined. There's command help finding the listing the database connection, getting the connection to test. I don't really have an example of that, but there's command line help that you can use to list those out. But the main point is that you want to test the database connections before the next step. 13. At this step, you can create a deployment environment PY file, Python. We'll use this for WSAdmin from the command line to create the deployment environment. You give a topology name. In this case, it's just, in this example, it's just RMRF, remote messaging and remote support. That's the topology pattern, topology runtime label, WPS. And then the DB design file. The DB design file is used here to, if you've ever built the environment using the GUI, there's a step where you provide all of the database connections, the usernames, passwords, schemas, other database properties. Those are all provided as answers from the DB design file. The DB design file is really nice because it puts data once. you don't have multiple descriptions of what the database connection is. When that's used to create the scripts and everything, the profile and the deployment environment, and when they all match, it works. I've made several mistakes here where I didn't have the design matching or the schema matching, and this step fails, but it doesn't really give you a good checkpoint of what to go back and correct. So this is part of the reason why you want to test the basic connections. If this step fails, deleting it and going back is the best way to fix it. So the profiles and the design, all of this should match is the key here. So the first task here was to create the deployment environment definition with remote messaging and remote support. The next two lines are adding the nodes. See here, node name N1 and N2. Those are the profiles. And then save. Generate the deployment environment. And then save it again. And then start it. Slide 14. So once the deployment manager started, you'll have a log file called aboutthisprofile.txt. From there, you can find the SOAP port connection. So here as a script, I set SP to equal the result of that. So in my case, it was, since I had a starting port of 10,000, the SOAP port came out to be 10,003. Part of the creation of the deployment environment profile validates the ports and tests whether or not the port is available. So even if you say a starting port of 10,000, if 10,001 is used for something else, it could land at a different port. So either using a definition file validating that the ports are open and free is one way to do it. So you don't really need to do this step if you're defining what the SOAP port is. But if you're using a dynamic assignment, then this little shortcut helps. The wsadmin command is actually just executing the create deployment environment to the DMGR01 profile. I'm presenting it this way because I've used a couple of white papers that I've written as templates as I build these environments, and I found these shortcuts or setting variables and using the variable names as a way just so I can cut and paste and be lazy. It really speeds things up to create the deployment environments. 15. So as a white paper, I've written all of these steps that I've presented, and this is what I use to cut and paste to create my environments. I haven't taken really the time to generate my environments automatically, but it has become pretty easy for me to build and destroy these environments. I found that working with customers, this is a long process that has multiple points of failure, but by following these install steps and this example that I've created for myself, it really is very simple to create a deployment environment. And through a little bit of work, depending on your standards and practices, how your environment's requirements are needed, I think you too also can use this to generate deployment environments through scripting. 16. Installation prod techno it captures all topics for what's your business process management products in this techno and includes links to other problems that we've discovered. the presentation by Dr. Stefan Volt last week, Troubleshooting WebServe Process Server Projects Integration with a DB2 Database, you might also find very useful. I didn't create a link here for that yet, but I found that presentation on DB2 very useful. That's another WebServe Technical Exchange presentation. Slide 17. So in summary, install and deployment environments can be created from shell scripts. And the key message, the one place that I fell down several times before figuring this out, is you have to test the database connection and permissions before creating the deployment environment. And not stated here, but making sure that the data definition, making sure that the schema or the strategy that you've created for setting up the data definition language is matching what you've created in the database description. I know it seems pretty basic, but it was a point that once you miss that step, it's very hard to get out of that. Not very obvious. What you'll end up with is a deployment environment that the data source connections are not created. If it can't connect to the database, it will fail to create the JDBC data sources. So if it fails that, it'll fail to create the deployment environment. Slide 18. Of course, I have to plug our support portal. This is where you can find information on tech notes and problems that we've already resolved. And if you can't find, you can always file a service request, find tools, and like IBM Support Assistance, and find fixes that we've created through upgrade through Fix Central. 19. That's my presentation. I hope you find it useful. Joseph, I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you, Dan, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Don, we would like to open the line for questions.
I'm showing no questions in the queue.
Thank you, Don. I have a couple of questions in the group chat, so I am going to announce those questions verbally over to you, Dan.
All right.
Okay, so the first question we have here is, how different is the process for IBM BPM 7.5, for example, with respect to database names, etc.?
I've only started really looking at BPM 7.5. I don't believe it's too much different, but I really can't answer that. I understand there's some good information on the Info Center on BPM 7.5, but I haven't really gone through it, so I can't really answer.
Okay, so we'll move on to the next question here. Can we create multiple deployment environments? If so, what are the drawbacks?
The only drawbacks I see, multiple environments, if it's all created under the same user ID, it's very simple. The port conflicts that can occur are avoided through internally looking through the ports. When you create a deployment environment and you set up to use a starting port, for example, one of the port numbers in the range, if it's not available, will just move to the next port. So if you create two deployment environments with using the same starting port with two different users, if the first system is alive and up and running, all the ports are on, no problem. The second instance will move to the next ports. However, if it's the first environment was not running and the second user does the same thing, uses the same starting port, he will get those ports. So you'll have two environments that have port conflicts built in. That's avoided if it's all under the same instance where the profile path would be the same, right? If it's the same user, then they search through Service Index XML, which is the registry for the ports, and will avoid any port conflicts even if it's not running. So multiple deployment environments other than ports, resources, database resources, and segregating those. The resources, if you remember the diagram from slide 2 or slide 4 maybe, showing the remote messaging and remote support, you have for each node, managed node, you have four JVMs. So four virtual machines default to, I think, 512 megs per machine. Depending on your configurations for your development or whatever you're using it for, can add substantial load. So you can chew up a lot of memory really quickly. So that's the only disadvantage I can see. I think it's a really good advantage to run under the same user for the port conflict thing or set up a convention where you use a port range assignment for the different environments of different users, or you can just set up some basic starting ports and segregate that way. So I don't really see any problem with it. Just depends on resources. Hope that answers your question. Let us know. Oh, failed event manager, creating multiple deployment environments, and then a follow-up question referring to more specific components like failed event manager, app scheduler, which are shared between environments. I don't know why they would be shared between environments, if that's multiple deployment environments, they wouldn't share the same event management or app scheduler. I think that's a complex problem or a complex environment that I don't quite understand how to answer that. Sorry.
Thank you, Dan. And it looks like our last question is RMRS plus web topology. Is this the recommended pattern for IBM BPM 7.5 Advanced Edition?
I imagine that it would be the same. But I just really can't answer at this time. One other question Sanjoy asked. Anything to be highlighted for DB2 on ZOS? The ZOS system typically running more restricted. Some environments won't allow you to, or it's for security purposes that normally you won't allow for set schema ID. So as long as you're setting up for different security restrictions make things a little bit more difficult on some environments. So understanding the restrictions and sitting down with the DBA is in the planning stage are, I think, very important. Even in distributed, some environments won't allow the user to own the schema. And there, you'd need to grant the user for that schema. And the same exists in DB2 for ZOS. Maybe it's just as a practice, security is more tighter and restrictive there. So in the past, we've seen some conditions where startup after upgrade, we'll try to do some data definition language, DDL, that isn't permitted. So there's some manual steps that you have to get into to do upgrades for the governance tables and things like that. There's tech notes for that, though. Highlighted for DB2 on Z, that's the only thing that really can come to mind right now. Works really well. There's some things about VPC and when you're on Z, and they're typically set up for one instance, so they'll get an assignment for a schema, but maybe change the isolation level. So DB2 read stability is necessary for, or not is re, not necessary, not required, but is strongly recommended. I think from WPS, it's called repeatable reads, but for the isolation level for DB2, read stability is real important. And it makes sense to have your own instance if that can't be done throughout the whole database. in some cases, the databases are shared, and that's not permitted. So the need for read stability is important for DB2 or for BPC, and makes sense to have it in its own instance for that if you can't do it from the whole system. Having multiple instances makes things maybe more complex for the DB2 admin, but it's a whole lot nicer to run and to manage performance, things like that, to have your own instance.
Thank you, Dan, for answering those questions. Since we don't have any other questions at this point in time, we will conclude the presentation.